Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Wall. She was a South Dakota farm kid and SDSU graduate who grew up and discovered an unexpected call to mission. Greg Stern talks about his work with Crisis Rescue International in an upcoming presentation at South Dakota State University. He joins us for a preview of that talk and a look at rescuing children from trafficking. And he's joining us today from the Janine Basinger Studio on the campus of SDSU. Greg Stern, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let's get started with, where you're originally from and how you kind of, like, I'm trying to get at this idea of, did you learn early on a call to service of some kind, or is that something you came at an adult age?
Well, I grew up in a small town in South Dakota here, and I graduated here from SDSU in 1994, and I opened my gym business here in 1995. So I've been in Brookings ever since, and really the calling really came in 2011, where I just really felt that God was leading me to help with kids and sex trafficking. And so for really about 2 years, I researched a lot of ministries, a lot of different organizations, try to get involved. And a lot of the ministries and organizations I was looking at really just kind of wanted my financial help. And I really felt that I was supposed to be a part of being on the ground, be the hands and feet of really helping these children. And so in 2013, through my gym business, I was invited to a special training through a nutrition company that didn't know at the time why I was supposed to go, but I was selected. There were 60 people selected out of actually 500,000 people that are involved in this company. Huh. And so it was really a kind of a unique situation to get called for this. And so really a week before I was to go to this training, my mother-in-law passed away. And just to give you kind of the correlation why that's so important is my mother-in-law really loved children. She actually had 12 children of her own. She had 9 by birth, 3 adopted, and 2 of those adopted from India. And so 3 days after her funeral, we ended up going to this training, my wife and I, and we sat by this couple, and he introduced himself. He goes, "My name's David Farmer. I'm a pastor. I have a ministry called Crisis Rescue International. I rescue kids from sex trafficking in India." Now, it's one of those moments where you never forget it. And my wife looked at me and I looked at her and she goes, "You're going to India, aren't you?" And kind of the rest is history. And I've been on 16 trips and I just got back about 2 weeks ago.
Wow. When is the first time you even realized that what a problem it was? I mean, was the research that you were doing, like you were doing that research because you knew that it was a big deal in the world, or were your eyes opened, so much more when you started working with Crisis Rescue International?
Definitely my eyes were open once I joined Crisis Rescue, the leadership team. You know, when I was researching here in the States, it's so much different when you get to a third world country. We kind of classify everything in the United States, whether it's, a girl running away from home and selling herself, which is truly, it's heartbreaking, but it's really not trafficking. When you really look at the definition of trafficking, whether it's drug trafficking or gun trafficking or human trafficking, it is literally buying and selling as a possession. And so my very first trip to India in 2013 was eye-opening. It was literally life-changing, meaning the first thing I noticed, and I still can't get over it, is the age of these children that are getting trafficked. Mm-hmm. And you're talking 5, 6, 7 years of age that are already working in a brothel. And so when you see that, it's hard to come back to the States and tell people about this because we can't fathom it. So that was really kind of the first eye-opening, and then just extreme poverty. We have some areas, obviously, in America that are, have poverty and so on, but to see it to that magnitude puts a whole new perspective and definitely makes you appreciate everything you have.
Tell me about how you begin when something is systemic like that and you've got 5 and 6-year-olds being trafficked. How do you rescue children? Where do you start?
Really, we focus mainly on basically 3 different ways that we get children. The first is literally dealing with brokers and brothels. Brokers are basically people who buy and sell children. And brothels are basically where they're sold sexually and so on. And brothels will look different in a lot of different areas. So you'll go in a city, for example, you go to Delhi, GB Road. If you were to Google that, you'll see it. It's really prevalent. And basically it would be the first floor of the buildings would be like a business, small businesses, and then 2nd, 3rd, 4th floors are all brothels. And you'll see thousands upon thousands of kids and girls that are in these brothels. Now, if you were going in a rural setting, you would be kind of in the middle of nowhere in a village. Basically, it could be anywhere from 6 to 12 grass huts, and that would be considered a brothel. And so when you're going into, that's one of the ways we get children, is actually go undercover and deal with the brokers themselves. The second way we get children is actually through the Hindu religious practice, and it's called Devadasi. It's a title given to kids, young girls. Basically, when girls are 7, 8, 9 years of age, they get dedicated to the temple. They actually get dedicated to the priest and so on to actually appease their gods. And so when you look at it from the outside in, it's really nothing more than prostitution, organized prostitution, and sexual exploitation, where these kids are basically given over to the temple, where they'll basically be a slave to the priest, where they'll do several duties, whether it's cooking, cleaning, whatever. And then once they actually hit their first menstrual cycle, they'll auction off her virginity. And they literally will auction her off to sometimes as little as 25 pounds of rice. And basically he will then take her, abuse her, until she comes pregnant, and then he will discard her to the streets, where her only survival is prostitution or to beg. And so that's the second way we get children through that way. And then the third is, because of the extreme poverty, we do a lot of work in the slum areas and remote villages. Because of the extreme poverty, this is a high-risk area for traffickers to target. They will take advantage of the poverty, basically deceive the parents, if there is parents, or basically just take the children, and they will then abuse them or sell them to the brothels from there. So that's the third way we get them. So that's really the three ways we focus on getting children.
When you talk about doing undercover work, that would indicate then that it's not unusual for Westerners to come and participate in this process.
Correct. So like one of the examples, when we've gone undercover and purchased children, that we have noticed that they will teach them English. And obviously the first time I went through that process kind of made me puzzled a little bit. But basically the brokers would say it makes them more valuable because of the customer. So yes.
Hmm. All right. So what happens to these children next? What possibly kind of future can you lay out for them?
It's amazing. Kids are so resilient, meaning once we get a child, we actually take care of them from the moment we get them. We house them, we educate them, we school them, we feed them, everything, clothe them. And so, you know, initially when we get them is we take them, get them clothes right away, and then obviously take them to one of our safe homes, where they are then basically taken care of a pastor and his wife that oversee the home. And so the future is amazing. Like I said, these kids are so resilient once they get into a school system and they feel the love of like a parent and feel love of other children, they change dramatically. I mean, literally within weeks, they can go from what they've been through to literally a smile on their face and knowing that they have a hope and a future. And so, again, they are ours from day one, and they do have a hope. And so now, being involved since 2013, I've seen kids grow up through the school system, and we've actually had some graduate through college now, and actually a few of them being married. So it's kind of exciting for me. It's kind of like being a grandpa. I'm already grandpa, but now I have all these kids that are so beyond grandpa. So it's pretty amazing.
And what kind of stories do they tell you? Is part of the healing process, you know, are you dealing directly with that trauma, and they're telling, you know, exactly what's happened to them?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. Again, it's so much different when, you know, when we do it, like, for example, an undercover where we get children that way. At first, they don't trust us because they assume we're another customer.
Right.
And so, but once we get them back into an environment where they are at one of our safe homes and they see other children, and our children are so amazing because they end up being like an elder sibling to these children, and they are part of our ministry, meaning they help take care of these children, and they soon realize within basically hours that they're safe. Meaning it's a different environment. And then obviously once we get back to there, they understand we're not bad, we're not going to hurt them, and we're there to take care of them. They really do change that quickly because of that, out of that environment.
For you personally, as you do this work, there has to be, and I want to tie the conversation you had with your wife back into this, and when she says you're going to India, there has to be a risk here as you're confronting, you know, undercover or just in general, these brokers, and the system has to there has to be some kind of risk to you and the organization. How do you mitigate that?
Really by faith. When we've gone undercover, is there situations where we get patted down for weapons and all that? Absolutely. But we also know we keep in the forefront why we're doing it and who we're doing it for. And we've always been protected that way. And it's a situation where my wife and I have had that conversation where she knows I'm called to do this. And she's so tied with it because her mom's background of just loving kids and adopted two from India as well, that she just feels like this is also what we're called as a family, meaning my wife and I, that she's a part of it as just as much as I am. So, and it's just kind of leaving a legacy for her mother or her mom. And just, again, it's one of those things where we're called, we just feel protected. Is there danger? Absolutely. But we just know this is where we're supposed to be.
So the first time you're in a situation where you can rescue, one little girl, 1 7-year-old girl, there's how many that you can't get to at that moment? And how do you deal with the overwhelm of, I can do this work, but there are so many people that I cannot reach?
That's a battle every day.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's overwhelming. You're talking, especially in India, India is kind of the hub of trafficking because of extreme poverty. So a lot of the kids get crossed over the borders, Nepal and Pakistan and so on as well. But, the first trip I was on, yeah, it's very, very overwhelming because you're talking millions of kids.
Yeah.
And again, it can be overwhelming, but you have to put it back in perspective is for this one child, you are changing their life. And again, our ministry is so important because as the country gets closer and closer to being closed, meaning going over there, they don't, it's harder to get in the country. And so we just know that these kids are going to take what we've done and what they've learned and help reach other kids that have gone through this. So again, it's one of those things where we're kind of raising up the next generation to take over when we can't get in the country. So again, you just have to put in perspective that you can't help everybody, but the one that you did help is going to change their life forever.
What's legal, what's illegal, and what kind of support do you have from local law enforcement?
It's illegal, but for the most part, a lot of times the government is just as corrupt and the authorities are just corrupt. Some of the brothels are actually run by authorities or run by the actual cops and so on. So it's really, you have to be careful what you do and what you say and where you go. And so you have to be mindful of that. And obviously the country probably more so does not like the Christianity versus even the trafficking, but the trafficking, basically, again, when it comes down to it, any kind of trafficking, it's all about the money. And so when you're dealing with this, it's literally, as long as you got the money, you can purchase it or however you want to do that. But it always comes back to you have to be careful where you go with that.
So the stories you told about the priests and the auctions, that has to be a twisting of what Hindu faith is. Do you do any kind of interfaith work with Hindu leaders or, with religious leaders in India or other countries to address that from a foundational perspective?
Yeah, obviously we don't hide our faith. Again, you have to be a little careful. We don't go into the country as a minister or a pastor. We go as just tourists just for that reason because they don't like Christianity. But obviously it's such a part of what we do. As far as doing ministry, even like in remote villages and so on. So we do, again, you have to be careful who you share this with, and you just really got to be led that way to who you do talk to about that and who you don't. But as far as our kids and so on, they get it from day one. We work with a lot of local pastors and their wives over there, so meaning that it's not just us going in there. We are partnering with them because there's several of them that they have the same heart we do for these children,
right,
and they just need help. And so we don't go in and kick down the door and say, hey, look at us Americans. We have this all covered. It's really, we're working and we're just partnering with them, really like-minded, like-hearted people. So,
yeah. How successful or how effective have you been? How many children have you rescued?
Right now we actually have 8 safe homes. So we have 8 different pastors and wives that we work with. And take care of just short of 300 kids that we have in our custody right now that we take 100% control of. We've rescued more than that. Some, again, they've gone on and grown up, gone through college and married. So over the last 6+ years, you're looking at pushing 500 kids.
Wow. Well, it's Crisis Rescue International, and you can hear Greg Stern tell this story and much more at a South Dakota State University speaker series, and it's Thursday, November 7th, kicks off at 5:30 and goes to about 7 p.m. It's in the Alumni Center, Wooster Celebration Hall. Greg, thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for this incredible story.
Well, thank you.